The state of Arkansas executed two inmates last night. It was the first time in 17 years that any state has executed two people on the same day. These executions came as the state carries out a series of death penalty sentences before one of the drugs used in lethal injections expires. Arkansas put another man to death on Thursday of last week. There's another execution scheduled for this Thursday.
Austin Sarrett joins us now to talk about the politics of the death penalty. He's a professor of jurisprudence and political science at Amherst College. He's also the author of Gruesome Spectacles, Botched Executions, and America's Death Penalty. Austin, welcome to Central Time.
Well, thank you for having me.
Where would you say that America's attitude toward the death penalty stands today?
I would say that the United States is in a period of national reconsideration of capital punishment. Indeed, we're in a period that would have been unimaginable a couple of decades ago. There's lots of evidence for this period of national reconsideration and these changing attitudes. Let me just cite a couple of things. So if we go back to the late 1990s, in the United States, we were giving death sentences to about 300 people a year. Last year, that number was around 30. If you look at the number of people executed, again, go back to the late 1990s, at the high point, we executed 98 people in 1 year, and last year that number was around 20. So there's something happening about the death penalty across the United States, which is leading people and public officials and jurors to have second thoughts and doubts.
And you're right that today, in your estimation, people are way more concerned with the actual way that the death penalty is administered than they are with the moral questions. What in particular about the way capital punishment is administered is troubling to people?
Well, I think that the system, the death penalty system, is perceived to be broken or deeply flawed in three different aspects. So when it comes to the very basic question about whether or not someone is guilty of a capital crime, we've seen through the use of DNA evidence that many errors are made. When it comes to sentencing, we know that among the factors that is most important in explaining whether or not someone will get a death sentence is the race of their victim. And with respect to the process of actually executing people, we know that the technologies that are available are by no means foolproof. We've seen gruesome and quite disturbing botched executions. So it's possible for people to be in favor of the death penalty in the abstract, but deeply concerned about the way in which the death penalty is actually administered. It's possible for people to say, I'm in favor of the death penalty in a philosophical or moral way, but I'm just against executing the innocent. So there's concerns for these different problems at different phases of the process. I think it has eroded some of the enthusiasm for the death penalty that one would have found back in the late 1980s, for example.
And as we said, the death penalty has been in the headlines again as the state of Arkansas is making moves to execute several more inmates before the end of April because their stock of one of their drugs for the end of life is running out at the end of April. What is your sense about that particular reason as a sense of urgency in Arkansas?
Well, the problem of getting drugs to use in lethal injection has become a problem in many different states in the United States. Drug companies, pharmaceutical companies, are reluctant to have their drugs, which they produce to save lives and alleviate pain, used to end life. Arkansas faced an unusual problem, and that was that it's kind of used by date on the first drug in its three-drug protocol, midazolam, was going to expire or end at the end of April. I think that the problem for many people was that when we execute in the United States, we want to do so in a way which is deliberate, considered, and in which the dignity of the condemned is maintained as much as possible. After all, our constitutional values suggest that when we punish, we're going to punish in a way that is different and better than the crimes that justify the punishment. And I think what happened in Arkansas is just raised concerns about whether that state, in its haste to execute, is really living up to those commitments.
We're talking right now with our guest Austin Sarrett from Amherst College about the politics of the death penalty in light of a series of executions in Arkansas. And Austin, I know you've been thinking about whether in cases like this, whether there's a sense that the lethal injection is and the choice to go that route in general has been considered and thoughtful, or whether it appears arbitrary. And what do you see in Arkansas in particular with this deadline of a drug expiration?
Well, again, I think that the deadline of a drug expiration is not a very good reason for moving in haste to the execution process. And indeed, what we've seen in Arkansas is, I think, a kind of chaotic process. So of the people who were originally scheduled to be executed in the 10-day period in April, four of them have been granted stays. Three of them have been executed, and one is scheduled to be executed. The fact that half of the people who were scheduled to be executed have been granted stays should tell us something about the way in which the death penalty was proposed to be carried out in Arkansas. After all, the idea of a kind of assembly line style of execution, that's generally not the way in which we punish people in the United States. That approach to punishment is more often found in places like Saudi Arabia or Iraq, in which mass executions or executions of large numbers of people in relatively compressed periods of time is much more common.
And the governor of Arkansas has said that, in his estimation, the way the executions were carried out was flawless. And there's been also mention of closure for the victims, that there may be this deadline which could appear arbitrary, but there is the aspect of closure for the families of the victims. And here's a clip of the father of the victim, Jack Jones, who was executed first last night.
I hope the state of Arkansas and the government and the court system learns from this. It don't take 22 years to get something done. Get it done right, and people don't have to live like this or think about this for 20-something years.
And that's a clip from NPR member station KUAR. And we have a question there about closure. And you say, you ask in your pieces that I've seen you write whether or not this has been an example of closure, an example of the opposite, that there's too much haste there for there to be that closure that you think the families of victims would like.
I think the question of closure for families of murder victims is really a difficult and obviously quite painful one. There's nothing that the state can do to adequately respond to the horrible grief and suffering that accompanies such a crime. And I think we need to recognize that. Secondly, I think we need to understand that the death penalty process is an incredibly complicated one, and that we're really caught, I think, between two contradictory desires. So on the one hand, as the clip just suggested, families want to move as expeditiously as possible from the time a sentence is handed down to seeing that that sentence is completed. And that's a perfectly understandable reaction. At the same time, as I mentioned earlier, there are justifiable concerns about the process through which sentences are handed down, the process through which determinations of guilt are made, and the processes through which executions are carried out. And resolving those concerns in individual cases typically takes time. The more expedited the process of moving from a death sentence to an execution, the more likely that errors will be made, and that when errors are made, they cannot be rectified.
So when there's a sentencing, it can be a very long road into the end of that end-of-life process, that decision to have the lethal injection. As we've been seeing, some of these inmates have been on death row for decades. What is the process that takes this long to reach a conclusion in some cases?
Well, in death penalty states, there is a quite complicated process of appeal, which follows from the sentence. Indeed, in most death penalty states, there's an automatic review by an appellate court or state Supreme Court. But then there are a variety of issues of federal law and federal constitutional rights that may also be subject to review through the federal court system and using the process of habeas corpus review. And inmates, the condemned, want to exhaust, as one would imagine that they would, their legal remedies at both the state level and at the federal level. And I want to just emphasize this one point, and that is that the more rushed executions are, the more we seek to move from sentence to execution quickly, the more room there is for error and the less room there is to correct the error. And people who are supportive of capital punishment have, I believe, the greatest stake in making sure that when we execute, we get it right. The legitimacy of capital punishment depends upon our ability to punish in a way that is compatible with our commitments to due process of law, equal treatment under the law, and to the avoidance of cruel and unusual punishment. It's not surprising that figuring that out and getting it right takes time.
We're talking with Austin Surratt right now from Amherst College about the politics of the death penalty in light of the series of executions in Arkansas.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What do you think about this series of executions we're seeing in Arkansas? Do you support or oppose capital punishment? What questions do you have about these executions, about how the process works? Call in with your thoughts and questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we continue our conversation with Austin Surratt and get to your calls in just a little bit here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our conversation now with Austin Surratt, professor of jurisprudence and political science at Amherst University. We're talking about the series of executions in Arkansas. The state just executed two inmates last night.
And we'd like to hear from you on this conversation at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the death penalty as it stands today? What is your take on the series of capital punishments in Arkansas? And what do you think about using lethal injections to carry out death sentences? You can call in now at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. And Austin, earlier I mentioned that the governor of Arkansas had said that he thought the execution so far had been carried out flawlessly. You've written a book on what you call botched executions. Do we know if an execution has been carried out the way it is intended to be carried out?
Well, in the case of the first of the executions that was carried out last night, there was conflicting testimony about what happened. Some suggested that the execution was extended, that it took 45 minutes to find a usable vein, and that the time after the midazolam was administered was insufficient to render the inmate unconscious, and that he was making gestures with his mouth and appeared to be gasping for air. Others said, as you've noted, that they thought the execution went off as planned. The United States has quite a long history of botched executions. If you look at all of the executions in the United States since 1900, approximately 3% of them have been botched, and a botched execution is an execution that doesn't follow the legal protocol or standard operating procedure. And paradoxically, lethal injection, which has been seen as the latest development in the technologies of execution, lethal injection has the highest rate of mishap. Approximately 7% of all lethal injections in the United States have been botched in one way or another.
Let's take a caller now. We have Janae joining us in Madison. Janae, hi.
Hi. I just had a question. I'm in the veterinary field, and we use something to euthanize animals called pentobarbital, and it works really flawlessly, and also they go very peacefully. And midazolam is a drug we also use, which is actually really hard to overdose an animal on. So it's, my question is, why the use of midazolam? And why pentobarbital can't be used?
Janae, thank you for that. And Austin, would you talk a little bit about why midazolam is used in Arkansas and what other options might be?
Sure. First of all, we need to realize that when states develop their lethal injection protocols, they're developing a kind of one-size-fits-all method of execution. So when someone goes into a hospital, not talking here about veterinary hospital, but when a person goes into a hospital and they need to have a procedure, great care is making sure that the right anesthetic is chosen and administered in the right dose for them, for their body mass index, for whatever heart, whatever their strength of their heart is. State execution protocols do not require such individualized treatment. And in fact, if you look across the United States, drugs used in different states are quite varied. In Arkansas, they use a one drug. They have used rather a one drug, the dose of pentobarbital. In Georgia, they use a one drug dose of pentobarbital. In Idaho, they use a one drug dose of pentobarbital. In Missouri, they do as well. So there are various protocols that are used, and there's no single protocol that is required by the American Constitution.
And what about options, other options that aren't on the table, and maybe also drug manufacturers' willingness to be associated with a lethal injection, having their drug used in that way?
Well, that's been, as I said earlier, a source of difficulty for states in their efforts to obtain supplies of lethal injection drugs. And I think we need to be clear that the idea that we can find a way of executing which is foolproof, flawless, guaranteed to be safe, reliable, and humane has been belied by our history. And throughout the early part of the history of the United States, the preferred method of execution was by hanging. In the late 19th century, the electric chair was introduced, and when it was introduced, it came along with the promise that it would be safe, reliable, and humane. In the 1920s, the gas chamber was introduced, the same kind of promises. In 1977, when the state of Oklahoma was the first to adopt lethal injection, the same promises were made. So the idea that we can find an absolutely foolproof method of execution, one that will be reliable in ensuring that inmates do not needlessly suffer, I think is a kind of a fantasy or pipe dream. And I think it's more appropriate if we ask the question, how much error are we willing to tolerate in the business of putting people to death?
Oregon, the state of Oregon, offers doctor-assisted suicide. We heard from a veterinarian who said she sees graceful passing. You think that, is there some qualitative difference here between what they're describing, Oregon and a veterinarian, and what the options are in the case of capital punishment?
Well, I think there are, and I think they really go to this question about the ways in which for someone going to use assisted suicide or for veterinary treatment, the doctor or the caregiver involved will go to great lengths to make sure that the dosage is right, that the dosage is going to work, that it's appropriate for the individualized circumstances of the people or the animal to which it is going to be administered. When it comes to execution, we don't do it that way. We do a kind of one-size-fits-all. And lethal injection is a tremendously complicated procedure. You have to find a usable vein. That's often complicated because the person that we're trying to execute may have a history of drug use, may be dramatically overweight, and we have to make sure that the drugs are going to work for that person. But we're not tailoring it so that we know as much as we can that'll work for that person. Therefore, it's not surprising that in the business of execution, errors will be made.
Let's take one more quick call from Paul in Waukesha. And Paul, briefly, what did you want to say?
I believe that capital punishment is just, and that we shouldn't worry about whether it's cruel or inhumane, because pretty much the horrific crimes those people are committing prove that they're more of an animal than they are of a human. So I actually don't think we should spend thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars trying to get a chemical cocktail when we could just either hang them or bring back the guillotine.
Paul, thanks. And Austin, just briefly, we're almost out of time. What's your response?
My response is that there are two questions. There's the question about whether or not capital punishment is just in an abstract moral sense. And then there's the question whether we can take this moral belief that it is just and translate it into effective punishments, which at the end of the day comport with our values. This isn't a matter of sympathy for the condemned. It isn't a matter of displaced compassion for the condemned. We have a constitutional commitment, and that commitment is to the avoidance of cruel and unusual punishment.
And we leave it there. Austin, thank you for joining us. That was Austin Sarrett, Professor of Jurisprudence and Political Science at Amherst College.